Good morning, everyone. May we start, Nala? Are we meeting the quorum?
Yes, Chair, the meeting can carry on. There's more than six members on the platform.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Ms. Martinez, honorable members of the portfolio support team from Parliament, the portfolio committee, minister, DM in absentia, acting DG, and also in absentia, the team from the Department of Public Health and Infrastructure.
Recording in progress.
Greetings to you all, and even those that are watching our meeting, greetings to you all. We are having this meeting today, which is more of a follow-up meeting on what we had in August this year, in which we wanted to check whether is the unit that we're told about, is it in existence. But today is the follow-up on the governance risk and compliance branch, is to check whether are there any consequent management processes or procedures in place so that they can stop the corruption in the department and its regional offices. Why are we raising that? As we all know, this department is seen as one of the most corrupt departments. And if this branch is not effective, it cannot stop the corruption. And again, one of the objectives of any department, and one of what highlighted by the president in his first SONA in this term, are that there will be means to fight corruption in all the departments. Having this unit, it's a good step forward, but is the unit functional? Is the unit doing whatever that it has to ensure that there is good governance in the departments, good governance in the regional offices? That's what we're looking at today. With those few words, we welcome you all, Minister, the department, and all those that will be presenting to us today. Nola, do we have any apologies? I do have one that was forwarded to me.
Yes, Chair.
Can you present apologies? I don't know, I think we have lost Ms. Martinez, but the apologies are on my side at the one of the DM, which we all know that she is out of the country, a visit to Cuba with some of the heads of the entities, a apology of the acting DG, an apology of Honorable Hicklin. Those are the apologies that I've received, and also an apology of Honorable Njobo, who will join the meeting at 10:30 when she lands in Cape Town. Those are the apologies that I have. Ms. Martinez, I suspect that you have a challenge of a network. So we can't hear you clearly, but those are the apologies, hoping that they are being noted. It's the apology of the minister, Ms. Nokolokevic, who is out of the country, the apology of acting DG, the apology of Honorable Hicklin, and the apology of Honorable Njobo, who will join the meeting a little bit later at 10:30. Those are the apologies that we have. Then can we go to the item on its own, Ms. Martinez? Minister, can you lead the presentation of the item?
Good
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. And once again, thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for noting the apologies for today. The delegation today is led by Deputy Director General Sasa Saban. We're also joined by Luwazi Maslango, who is the Chief Director for Monitoring and Evaluation, and Ms. Karabo Sabati, who is the Chief Director for Strategic Planning. And then Mr. Teho Mofokeng, who is the Director for Investigations. He is unfortunately leaving us at the 1st of December. He was the Acting Ethics Officer. So the post for Ethics Officer has also been advertised. Chairperson, I can't agree more with you around the issues of corruption. Yes, we have made some progress in the leases where we've been able to recover the overcharging on leases of 273 million. Recently, when I checked, we've recovered another 60 million. And we do have a proclamation with the SIU that is also investigating the overcharging of government on the leases. At some stage, I will also give the committee a report on what we call Operation Bring Back, whereby a lot of our buildings have been invaded illegally. Some title deeds from the deeds office, even there we found corruption. We had one example where, for instance, the Pan-African Parliament, the land there was sold illegally. So the SIU is working very closely with us, and specifically this unit, to deal with the corruption. But the committee and Chairperson, you are correct, that we need to put systems in place that can detect and prevent corruption. And this unit plays a critical role, and therefore it's really sad that since 2016, when the Department of Public Service and Administration approved the structure, that it is now where we are going to make sure that the budget is available for this unit and some of the funded posts and unfunded posts. And that is what we will be presenting to the committee this morning, the progress report after our meeting with the committee on the 24th of August. So Chairperson, through you, I will give over to Ms. Sasa Saban to do the presentation for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Ms. Martinez, can you share the hosting rights? Ms. Martinez is out. Khadija?
Also, Chairperson, Ms. Sasa Saban had problems this morning, and I'm going to ask then if we can bring on the Chief Director, Mr. Luwazi Maslango, to do the presentation. She's got some network problems this morning. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me ask Khadija, because I think the system has kicked out to Nola, and it's Khadija now with the host.
I see Sasa's back on Luwazi.
Morning, Chair. I just gave him right now.
Thank you, G. So who is going to present minister? Is it Lwazi or Sasa?
I just see Sasa's back online, but any one of the two is can do it on the board chairperson. Sasa, are you back online now?
Yes, good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson, colleagues, Portfolio Committee members. Apologies. I am struggling with connectivity this morning. I've got IT here with me. Chairperson Lwazi Mahlangu is going to do the presentation. He will take. We're going to provide the committee with the progress that we have made thus far, some progress, and however, we would to Lwazi.
I think Lwazi to make take the over.
Okay, thank you. Lwazi
must take over. Sasa, your line is very, very, very bad.
Apologies, Chairperson. Lwazi will do.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, the committee, members of the committee, Minister, and also the colleagues from the department. I hope I'm audible enough.
We can hear you clearly, Lwazi.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm actually presenting for outside using my phone. If I can be assisted, if Leanne is there, if you can be assisted with lighting the presentation, then I'll take the committee through the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. It's Leanne Jansen. Please, may I get sharing rights?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Basically, what we're presenting, as Minister has already said, we're presenting progress that's been made thus far since we presented in August. And also the efforts we are making in driving this process going forward. Next slide, Leanne. So we'll be giving the background, which will also talk up the structure, and then also look at the challenges and also how we are navigating through those challenges and putting in processes of establishing and ensuring that we have a fully capacitated as well as a functioning a unit in the organization. Thank you. Next slide. Chair and honorable members, here we are presenting the structure of governance, risk and compliance as a branch within the department, and this was approved, this structure was approved by it comprises the following units: monitoring and evaluation, which is headed at the chief directorate level, the strategic management unit, also headed at the chief directorate level, with service delivery improvement, governance and compliance, fraud and awareness, and anti-corruption unit. So these are basically the units within that branch headed by the DDG. Next slide. Now, this is a full structure now where we look at the breakdown of all these units within GRC. What we're going to present now, we also show members the posts that are vacant but unfunded, and also show posts that are vacant and funded, and we'll also highlight which ones are funded and what is the status in terms of those funded. The next slide will then show those posts. Now, we've color-coded it. The ones that are fenced in red or with the red outline are the posts that are vacant and funded, and then the ones in yellow without the red lining are posts that are vacant but are unfunded. So if we start at a DDG level, which is the head of the branch, I'm sure also members will aware that Mr. Faisal Imtiaz has left the department. So that then leaves that post vacant. And also in the office, in that office, the office manager is also a position that is also vacant. It is funded and processes are underway to fill that position. Now, when it comes to the monitoring and evaluation, all positions are funded and filled. And then in terms of the strategic management unit, the main one is the director for risk management, which is vacant and unfunded and funded. And that post is also underway in terms of the advertising. We're at the stage of shortlisting for that position. And that also speaks to the assistant director in terms of planning. Now, there was an assistant director in the past since the approval of the structure in 2016. Then also between that time and now, we have experienced movements where some have been promoted, some have left the department. So we had an acting ASD, but now we have fully advertised and the process is also underway to then capacitate that assistant director in planning. With regards to assistant director technical in terms of risk, we had a person who was appointed as ASD in the risk management. She has since left the department and that process is also underway to fill that post because the funds are available to appoint that. Now, the importance of risk, which I'll touch on in relation to the ethics and also the slides that speaks to corruption, anti-corruption and ethics, I'll also touch on the linkages between the two and the importance of that. We also have the service delivery improvement plan, which also is at a directorate level, reporting under the chief director strategic management unit, is also vacant and funded. And processes are also underway, working together with the corporate services HR to fill that position. So we are also moving towards filling that post. Then when it comes to anti-corruption unit, we have a deputy director, anti-corruption, fraud awareness. We do have currently two deputy directors, one on the investigation side, one on the fraud awareness side. We have an additional deputy director. That post was already advertised. We are also in the process of filling that position as we speak. So those are the positions, Chair and Honourable Members, where we have vacancies and are funded, and we are already in the process of filling those positions. The ones in yellow, Chair, are the posts that are unfunded, they are vacant, and we are looking at other means of a long-term plan of filling these positions to capacitate these units going forward. Next slide, Leah. Now, when we presented to the committee in August, we also highlighted these as part of what we call the priority posts within the organization. Here we are saying priority because overall in the organization, there are also other units that are also in need of capacity. So when we look at priority, we then look at how do we then revisit the funding within the organization and look at priorities that we can also reprioritize the positions that will assist the organization. Now, from a governance risk and compliance component, we looked at the establishment of a governance and compliance unit, which we are prioritizing. I think this also resonates with the remarks made by the chair and as well as minister in dealing with corruption, as well as ensuring that we have an ethical function in the organization. That then drives the priority of government of ethical capable state, and also the outcome of the department, which is in the strap plan and APP, that speaks of a resilient, ethical, and a capable department. So these are the ones that have been prioritized, the Director for Governance and Compliance, and also with the Deputy Directors to assist the Director in that component. Also, we're looking at a Chief Director who will assist at the level of a Chief Director who will also oversee the processes of ethics, as well as assistance within that that unit to oversee and assist the function of ethics in the organization. This is a large organization, and I think because of the large organization and the numbers there, and also the perception out there about the public works and the corruption issues, it is pitched at that level to ensure that it has muscle to give direction and also provide ethical expertise and administer that in the organization. So these are the priority posts that we have reprioritized as organization. Of our MTF assets. Next slide. Chair and members, we have started this process. We started this process a long time ago in establishing this unit. But parallel to that, when we're establishing this unit, within we had also that will also to risk appetite that speaks to the overall organization in dealing with the issues of fraud and corruption. So we've had those, but then now they need to then to be driven into the system, be part of the DNA of the organization, and then this unit will then be assisting that, working with other functions within the organization. So those are some of the things that we've done. So part of this process is a long-term plan, is that to as an issue of funding internally, as well as also long-term plan. We have also put this priority post as part of the MTEF MTEF process, which is working together with National Treasury, where we have also presented a case on the importance as well as funding these positions. And then that will also assist in ensuring that these functions are fully capacitated, or these areas are fully capacitated, and then going forward, we're able to then deal with the issues of fraud and corruption, as well as the ethical conduct in the organization. And amongst other things, there are also risk aspects that we have to embed in the organization on how we deal with these issues, external risk, as well as internal risk in relation to fraud and corruption, and also working together with labor relations and legal on the issues of conduct of the officials in line with the DPSA code of conduct for public servants. Next slide. Now, this slide basically summarizes what I've just said about the functions of this ethics compliance officer, as well as the functions of the branch of the unit, as the establishment of the unit. We had a ethics officer, nominated ethics officer, who are appointed ethics officer, who I think Minister has already said will be leaving at the end of the of this month. And that then also assisted also in driving. We had an ethics committee comprising all the deputy director generals, as well as the key drivers and overseers of ethics, labor relations, legal, security, ICT, SCM, and as well as other areas that also have elements where there's a potential or we are highly exposed to fraud and corruption. So that then was also assisting in driving these components. And I think suffice to say, Chair, is that one of the most important things that we have also started doing as a way of establishing this is that we have also started in within GRC an analysis of the Zondo Commission report, where we are breaking it down to look at what are some of the components that can also be identified within the department that can also that we are exposed to that can give rise to these elements of fraud and corruption, that then would be worked into the agenda of an ethics committee as well as a ethics risk forming part of the risk enterprise risk management in the organization. And those are the issues that we have done, that we are currently busy with as well, to give effect to a fully functioning and an understanding of these areas within the organization. Next slide. I spoke about the ethics officer, Chair, and I think Minister raised this issue that we are also, processes are underway to close that gap and appoint an ethics officer to run the organization. There are quite a number of things that happen within the ethics officer as well. There is also a code of conduct. There's also areas of remunerative work outside the public service where the ethics officer plays a critical role as an assurer to ensure that there is no conflict of interest of public servants doing business with the state. And that is a significant role that the ethics officer plays. And that is the importance of ensuring that we have that ethics officer in that. And that is also regulated by public service regulation. Governance and Ethics Committee, we have spoken about that. It has been established in the organization and we are discussing some of these issues. I also alluded to the issue of a categorizing and analysis of the Zondo Commission that will also give effect to sending to also highlight and pick areas that would be that are red flags contributing to misconduct, conflict of interest and elements of fraud and corruption. Chair, we've also done and concluded a lifestyle audit. We first started off with what we call phase one of the lifestyle audit, where 60 officials at a senior level organization has been conducted. The report, we're working together with the SIU, assisting us the process on twofold. One is also in in-house capacitation so that we also run this process as an organization independently, but also we are also assisting us on the methodology that they then use in line with the public service regulations on the issue of lifestyle audit. So 60 was a part of the phase one senior management, 48 participated in this process, and the reports have been concluded by SIU, and the 12 that are outstanding, there are two things that are going to happen. One is that because this was a national directive for all public servants to participate in the lifestyle audit, there will be consequences. Consequence management will take place, and that now the report will be, as we speak, is currently with the head of the SIU, who will then familiarize themselves with this and then sign off the report, and then the action will then be taken after completion of that, or after the report has been submitted to the department through the minister to then take action against those. And then our next step is to go into phase two of the lifestyle audit, of which the 12 must be part of that parallel to the consequence or the actions taken against those 12 that did not participate fully during the lifestyle audit. So that is where we are with the lifestyle audit as part of giving effect to conduct and an ethical public service. I talked about the ethics management strategy, which also embeds the ethics risk in that framework, and also being discussed as part of the agenda items in the ethics committee. The RWOPs, which are remunerative work outside public servants, we've conducted this, and HR is managing the, there are quite a number of units that are involved there. There is a financial disclosure, which is administered by the corporate services. We also have code of conduct by labor relations. We also look at financial leakages. We also look at investigations. But all of these issues, through the ethics officer who oversees and provide assurance that everything is above board, and provide assurance to the deputy minister, and the accounting officer. And we manage a list of possible conflict of interest, which we are working together with National Treasury when we do a download from the CSD database of all the officials who have registered companies. And then we're also looking at an analysis of a conflict of interest, and we monitor that continuously to see if there is those. So that is also done, and it's also forming part of that ethics discussion, ethics committee discussion, to ensure that we do not have these elements coming through or seeing themselves dominating the organization and crippling the organization. So those are some of the things that we are also dealing with at that level of an ethics committee. So the new post of a chief director, governance and ethics, was evaluated. We've engaged the corporate services, especially through the organizational development unit, which deals with the structure, to look at the job description, because these changes happen over time with the new regulations coming in. So we need to monitor, we need to evaluate the job description in line with the public service regulation, especially now that lifestyle audit has been brought in. So we have to evaluate in line with those regulations to ensure that we do not have an ethics officer with a description that then is in conflict with the regulations. And the advertising of that position will be based on this this job description, as we already have evaluated with corporate services as well, and also assisted by the regulations from the public service regulations. Next slide. So the funding of these posts, as that again linking to that, the pre-prioritization of these posts, the importance of these posts, we have gone through the processes of applying for funding through the MTEF process, and all of those are under consideration. And the exit of the ethics officer, also the vacant and funded, also underway in dealing with the funding, and advertising and filling of those positions as a matter of urgent consideration. Otherwise, then we will also find ourselves at fault, the absence of a fully functioning ethics to actually address these issues of misconduct and also elements of fraud and corruption. So as a branch, we have looked at all of these issues as aligned with our ethics framework or integrity framework, a compliance framework, the public service regulations, and we are looking at moving with speed in funding as well as appointing these priority posts, to then have at least the branch or the unit to start the work of overseeing the issues, these elements within the organization, working with various departments, the units within the department, but more so also expressing that level of independence on the issues of ethics and conduct in the organization, so that it's also not polluted with those elements. It must have that independence to give proper assurance to the minister and the accounting officer in dealing with the issues that may result in unwanted or unwarranted consequences through misconduct and elements of fraud and corruption. We are also working with the SIU, assisting us on the site through the investigations and proclamations to some degree where there's a need for a proclamation, but also tapping on their expertise to deal with what they are recommending in the organization for improvement, then also to deal with those. We also embed that in the processes of the line functions that are also found to have contributed to this misconduct, and we'll also oversee those processes within the organization. So it is a work in progress. And I think it's also showing the need to move with speed in addressing these issues, capacitating as well as driving the function within the organization. Next slide. Right, so that is what we are proposing and presenting to the portfolio committee in terms of progress on the establishment of the ethics function. One is the issue of the moving with speed to fully advertise and appoint ethics officer. to also looking at funding priorities for the establishment of the governance and ethics, to also look into that. And then we embed all of those issues into the risk register where we deal with the ethics. And also the risk register has a component that deals with fraud and corruption, as well as possible fronting when we deal with the issues of the organization that will have these elements of fraud and corruption. Coupled with that, we're also doing surveys, perception surveys and fraud that will also give us signals of where there may be potential fraud, and these areas will then be brought into this. And then lastly is also the issues around the analysis of the Zondo Commission, to also looking at and looking at it in the context of the department and refocus and channel resources to look at the areas that are exposed to some of these elements that has been raised in this on the commission. And those are the things that are critical and will also require us to move with speed in ensuring that those areas are capacitated and drive the function. So we require the policy, the portfolio committee to note the progress that we've provided thus far, and also the elements that of fraud and corruption and misconduct, and also the ethics in that regard, and also their support in driving this ethical and capable developmental state. Thank you.
Thank you, Lazi, for the presentation. Then let me invite honorable members to raise questions and comments on this presentation that we have received. On my screen, the first speaker will be Honorable Van Schalkwyk, followed by Honorable Siwisa, followed by Honorable Graham Murray, followed by Honorable Tring. In that order, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to honorable Chairperson, Minister, members of this portfolio committee, our staff, as well as the departmental officials. Let me start by appreciating the report that has been presented, although there are some issues of concern, but let me zoom into the questions, Chairperson. I've seen, Chairperson, there are many positions that are vacant and unfunded. My question would be, what is the impact of these on service delivery currently, especially when you look at a DPSA approved posts in governance and compliance unit being unfunded, all of them, as well as being vacant? So that is my concern. How does it impact on service delivery? But also, Chairperson, I want to know if they are unfunded and vacant currently, what is the plans that are in place to ensure that they become filled, or they are being filled? Then, Chairperson, we are aware that governance risk and compliance specialists are very sought after in all departments, as well as in the private sector now. This is similar to professionals in the built environment, and they operate in a very competitive arena. So I would like to know, you might be able to recruit those individuals, but what are you having in place, strategies as well as resources to ensure that you retain these employees? And if you need something to ensure retention, what is it that you need that we can assist with in terms of the portfolio committee? Then, Chairperson, there is a need for governance, risk and compliance practitioners across all the departments currently. This must be coordinated so that consequence management results in responsible action that assists officials to walk the straight line. Where some officials keep stepping out of tune, the consequences must be real. For it to be real, there must be coordination across the three levels of spheres and with the SIU and the NPA. Has the department assigned such coordinating roles to the leadership and officials of the governance, risk and compliance work with other departments, as well as public work regional offices and the municipalities? That's my questions. I'll pause there. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Van Stalwijk. Honorable Sewisa?
Thank you, Chair. Hey, the network is bad here in where we are. Chairperson, I have a bit of a concern. They speak about prioritized posts, and the first thing that comes to my mind is the budget, where the budget is going to. Yes, I know I'm one of the people that always lament the minister that there's not enough consequence management that is being done. But from where is the budget going to come from? Because already where the money spent, close to 50% actually goes to salaries and no service delivered. So now we are talking about prioritized. And another, my other concern is that who will be monitoring this monitoring unit of consequence management? Because the committee that actually conducted, I stand to be corrected, the committee that conducted audit, lifestyle audit on certain officials, if it's the right committee that is made up of the DDGs, have the same DDGs gone through a lifestyle audit themselves? Because most of the time we find ourselves that the employees or the officials at the lower level are being exposed to lifestyle audit, and that the senior management, which are your DDGs and your DGs and ministers and deputy ministers, are not exposed to lifestyle audit. That's one question that I have. Have the DDGs gone through a lifestyle audit themselves? They speak about 60 officials that went through lifestyle audit. Was it from national or regional officers? Actually, which sphere are those 60 people from? And when did this lifestyle audit start, and when did it end? And why are we getting a report today that there was a recommendation that 12 of them must go for disciplinary action? So why has it taken so long? If we say that we've got a consequence management unit and we want to get the department right, then it should have been acted after that immediately after the lifestyle audit. Then disciplinary action should have been taken against those two. And if we can be indulged into what were the findings or what were the outcomes of the lifestyle audit for the 12 officials in question? Because my concern is the department is going to take long to bring these people to go to disciplinary action. And you know, Chairperson, most of the time we speak about people don't even go to disciplinary because they resign before any action can be taken to them, which means that the department is left with wasteful expenditure, and then it becomes a process to actually get these people to come and pay whatever, because there's no evidence. They never went through a disciplinary to say, this is the disciplinary, you came to account for yourself, this is what we found, now this is the outcome of the disciplinary, this is what needs to happen. You can't do that to somebody who's not officially employed by you. So I'm a bit worried that we've got 12 people that went through lifestyle audit as a recommendation that they must go through disciplinary action, and still it has not happened. I thought that if we get the presentation, we'll be told that 60 people went to lifestyle audit. 12 of them were found to be, the outcome was that they must be disciplinary. This is how far we are with the disciplinary. We are waiting for the outcome of the disciplinary, but it's a we are being told about the recommendation. Next thing, we are going to be told that those people have resigned, so no action can be taken against them. So those are some of my concerns. The budget for prioritized, are all the DDGs, did they go through the same lifestyle audit? What are the reasons that the recommendation has not been implemented? And are the 60 people that went through lifestyle audit, are they from national, provincial, or regional offices? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suisa, Honorable Graham Murray.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the department. I'd like to just say that at this stage, I'm a bit concerned. It almost feels like this unit is still a wish list as opposed to an actual viable unit, given the fact that the entire unit seems to be completely unfunded. So that's a concern for me, is that until it's properly funded and sort of empowered, how much effect is this unit going to actually have? One of the concerns I have is that we're speaking about an ethics officer. I didn't see an ethics officer reflected on the organogram anywhere. So I don't know where an ethics officer would be positioned. Is it somebody who already has an existing job that is then given the additional responsibility of being an ethics officer, or is it a person who is appointed as an ethics officer and that's the job that they do? If that is the case, to whom do they report? What is their actual role? How autonomous are they? Would you do background checks on a person who is appointed as an ethics officer? I read in the last couple of days, one of the municipalities, I think it was Itakwini, but I couldn't find the article now before the meeting. The guy who sort of heads up their whole fraud, risk and compliance unit is currently facing charges of fraud and corruption. So it's absolutely imperative that the people that work in this unit are also vetted to ensure that they are people of upstanding moral character and that they're not going to be, working behind the scenes to support fraud and corruption while ostensibly being part of an anti-fraud and corruption unit. So I'd like to know whether or not there will be actual vetting that takes place and whether or not that will be done. Like Honorable Suisa said, people are facing disciplinary hearings. They resign before that happens. There's no record on their file because the disciplinary hearings weren't completed. And as a result, they then applied another department. So will proper vetting be done of the people that are part of this unit? Another concern I have, just to come back to the ethics officer, I would like to know whether or not that post has been advertised, when it was advertised, where you've advertised it, and also is it a permanent or contract post? Because I'd like to get an idea of when you foresee that person being appointed. Then is there a standardized ethics code for ethics officers that is being applied within the unit? And if so, is there a relationship between that and international ethics organizations so that we're using best practice in this unit? In terms of the lifestyle audits, 20% of your senior management didn't comply. That's a high percentage of people that have failed ostensibly to pass a background check in terms of their potential to be people who would be fraudulent or corrupt. When you've done these lifestyle audits, are you then looking at linkages with work that they have done within the unit as to whether or not there's a connection between the areas in which they have failed and their roles and responsibilities within the department? Just to get an idea of whether or not there is potential fraud that can be then interrogated and followed through on with respect to tenders or projects or anything to that effect. And then Sort of tying in with what Honorable Suisa was saying, it doesn't help to have a unit that can investigate fraud and corruption, but then is not empowered to act on that. So are you going to be adopting a new disciplinary process that links into the work that you're doing so that you can fast track or facilitate a rapid response in terms of what you've investigated and discovered, so that there can be, you know, that it's not taking 2 years to do a disciplinary process on a person that you have found to be, you know, potentially or allegedly involved in fraud and corruption. So will there be a concomitant adoption of new disciplinary processes that can be followed so that it can be a seamless process? I think that is my questions for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Grandmother. Honorable Tree.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, want to support the comments and the questions that were raised by Honorable Suisa with regards to the lifestyle audits on the senior management. So I won't repeat them. I'll be looking forward to the answers also raised by Honorable Graham Murray. My first question, Chair, is to the Minister. Minister, you mentioned that action will be taken against those who have inflated leases, occupied buildings, sold property illegally, and so on. But my question here is, has there been any inflation of leases regarding those offices that have been leased by leased for SAPs while they wait to occupy the buildings at Telkom Towers? So has there been any inflation of leases that has been found with regards to those offices? And then Samantha Murray, Honorable Graham Murray raised, took my second question. And so I have the article in front of me, and that was in Etiquini. An official from the Compliance and Investigative Unit in Etiquini was recently arrested for fraud. And this is somebody who was supposed to be upholding the ethics of the organization, the ethics compliance within Etiquini. So again, the question there is what measures, as Honorable Graham Bray said, what measures or vetting is in place for our ethics compliance officials within this particular unit to ensure that they themselves don't fall foul of the law. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Singh. Let me again appreciate the report and the presenters of the report, starting from the Minister and Lwazi. We will seem as if we are singing the same hymn and the same verse. One, the unit is very crucial and important. If we want to talk about good governance, we talk about this unit. But the reality is that there are things that we have seen. There's an article now that both honorable members have raised it. So we really want to know what are your processes leading to attracting people to come and work in this unit, those that are best in the ethics and the risk officials. So how are you going to do that? Are you going to vet them? Are we not going to see what is happening in Etiquini? Two, then getting those people, you have vetted them. What measures will you put in place to ensure that they remain in the unit? Because if there are no measures in place that you would put to ensure that they remain in the unit, they will leave the unit and look for greener pastures. We don't want people there that are going to be here for 2 weeks and then maybe they also collude with others for corruption because there's nothing that is attracting them in the unit. So what measures will you put in place to ensure that you get the best through vetting processes, of course, and again ensuring that they remain in the unit. Otherwise, I'm covered by some of the questions that have been raised by my colleagues. Thank you. Over to you, Minister Ndlozi.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Can I just get permission to keep off my video? My network is also bad this morning. Honourable Chair, I want to assure Honourable Sawisa that we did listen to her, and the lamenting has helped. Because I always go back to the portfolio committee recordings and remind the administration about the things that you've asked for. What we have done, Honourable Chairperson and members, in terms of the funded vacant posts, together with Dr. Alec Moemi, we made an intervention. So from April 2022 to the 31st of October, we have appointed 244 new members. So the vacancy rate in the department is now 10%, down from 11 to 10%. That's a small percentage, but that 10% translates into about 551 vacancies. And of the 551, we've ensured that 357 of these vacancies have already been advertised, and some of them have been completed, and some is in the process of being completed. We've also given instruction that as the posts become vacant, or even before the posts become vacant, that at that point the advertisement should go to. We have also recruited in the human resource department to help with the capacity on a contract basis, a specialist for 12 months to support the process and make sure that we work through the 10% backlog. So the filling of the advertised 357 funded vacancies, the target is to have all of them filled by the 31st of March 2023. And then we estimate that another 194 vacancies that were not advertised, that we make sure that they advertise by the end of February 2023. So we now continuously monitor this process. And I do get a report from the acting DG every second week. And we will continue to make sure that we deal with all the vacancies. Because my departure point is that there are so many, especially professionals out there that are looking for work and that are unemployed. And here we are sitting with a funded post that we have not filled. So we're closely monitoring the situation. The issue raised by Honourable Graham Murray about the vetting process. Honourable members, in the financial year 21-22, we've identified 253 officials that need to be vetted with the assistance of the State Security Agency. And so far, as we speak now, the number of clearances out of the 253, we've only received 23 clearances. We have made inquiry from the SSA, the agency, as to why this is such a lengthy process. And I was made to believe that it involves interviews, collecting of supporting documents. They're also conducting polygraph tests. And a whole lot of other things that they are doing. So So the delay in issuing of the security clearance certificate, definitely we need, HSA need to do something about that, because it is not with it, not only within DPWI, but it cuts across many other government departments. So that is on the vetting. Now, Honorable Sitring, on the inflated leases for SAPs, I can still write to you and get you all the SAPs offices. I know there were a couple of them that we were paying quite high rents. But we, out of the 2,000 month-to-month leases, we have renegotiated and brought them down just to under 130. So I will go into still and get all the set leases out for Honorable Tring, and then I will send it to him. I agree with Honorable Chairperson that delays are unacceptable, that this department should have been up and running as far back as 2016. So I have now removed one of the excuses that there are not funding. And so we're now making sure that we indeed, even in next year's budget, that the funding is secured to fill all of those posts, because we can't continue to use the issue of not having the necessary funding to fill the post and get this unit operational. So Chairperson, I just wanted to speak on those few things, and then Lwazi and anyone of the unit can also respond to the other detailed questions. I thank you, Honorable Chair. Lwazi?
Thank you, Minister. Yes, in addition to what Minister said in terms of the delays in relation to the lifestyle audit, yes, there were documents. We started on the 11th of January, and it was conducted independently by SIU, outside the department, no officials of the department, except for the director investigations, who was the go-between the SIU and the department in administering this lifestyle audit. So it was purely and done by SIU from 11th of January 2022. Now, the first phase was to focus on salary levels, levels 14 and 15. Now, 14 is all the chief directors in the department, including all the 11 regional managers were also at level 14. Then level 15 was the deputy director general. So that was the first phase of the lifestyle audit. Now, first point was to also collect all the documentation, because they went to the bank statements, the assets, and all the things that are owned by that. So that actually took some time. And then the second step that they would then do is what we call the voice layered system, our analysis, where it will then look at the responses and the analysis of those responses based on the voice and the variations in the voices. So that also takes some time. And then they will then do an analysis of that report, of those responses. Then the third step is to then conclude their report on the basis of the documentation that was provided, the analysis, the voice layered analysis, and then they'll conclude. As we speak, the report is with the head of SIU, who will then sign it off to the minister. So it's actually an involved process. So all the 60 include the levels 14 and 15, as well as all the senior officials and organization. Now, because this is the first step and it was also an experience in the public sector, the lessons learned from that will also then inform the phase two of the approach in terms of all the other levels in the organization. And I think that will then move with speed, because there are lessons learned from this process. Now, the second aspect is the second question that was raised is whether there will be whether the officials within the units will be vetted. Normally, once you advertise, there will be a screening process or a vetting process by the security in terms of the history, as well as if there are any potential areas of concern to the incumbent. And once they are cleared and they are appointed into department, then there will be a vetting system working with the NIA, where now they look at the history for over 20 years of that individual with polygraphy, as Minister also talked about, of that, to ensure that this person is the right person in this group. And normally, because this is a very sensitive and they're dealing with sensitive information and documentation, it will be a top secret vetting process for the officials. With this, obviously, with that vetting process, it comes with the conditions of should they be or should we be found wanting in one or two things, there are these consequences. Then the third question that was asked in terms of the linkages across the entire organization, right? What we've done is, as we were formulating the ethics committee, we also looked at all the components within the organization that have the elements of corruption, elements of ethical conduct, and also the issues around what we may be perceived as corrupt elements that may also affect the organization. So we have labor relations, who deals with the issues of conduct of officials, and then also the extent to which consequence management is then taken in relation to that, whether it's punitive or corrective measures. The second one is to also look at the security services, where we look at the minimum information system, where we also look at the adherence to those. And the third is to also look at all the SCM practice and guidelines in terms of the PFMA and procurement policies, and ensuring that those who are participating within that space are also vetted and trained and understand the consequences of that. And then also from a HR point of view, we look at financial disclosures, where we're looking at the directorship and also ownership of assets to ensure that there's no conflict of interest. So we've brought in all of those into the umbrella of that ethics committee to ensure that. And then also in addition to that, we also look at the recommendations that are made. If it's an external investigation, for instance, the SIU, based on either proclamation or the assistance in some of the findings, we look at the recommendations if there are systemic issues. And then we also look at our internal investigations on systemic issues that then form part of all. So that's how we are linking all of those things, because we are looking at a risk-based assessment of ethics in the organization to address these issues of misconduct. And that's basically how we are looking at linkages in all of those areas. I'm not sure if I missed another question. I think
Honorable Chair, there is just one point, if I'm through, you may come back, that I have missed.
Okay.
I may come just back. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The point raised by Honorable Sawisa, and I agree with her, that about the 12 senior managers who have refused to participate in the process. I have instructed the department that, one, I need to get a list of the 12 people, and secondly, that the department need not wait for me to receive a report from the SIU. That is not related to the 12 people that are blatantly refusing to participate in the process that is a national instruction. And therefore, I've instructed them to proceed with the disciplinary action immediately, because this is refusal at entry level to participate in the whole process. So this is what we've done concerning the 12, because I might get only the report from the SIU next year. So my instruction to them, just yesterday we had another meeting, and I've asked them to start consequence management immediately. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Just a note, Minister, that the responses, if there are any responses that you would write down, as you indicated earlier, they are not then have to be given to the person who was asking questions, but to the committee secretary as the question was asked in the meeting. So I just wanted to clear that.
Thank you again
for the responses that you have shared with the committee and Lwazi. We will constantly ask these questions, Minister and your team, because as I indicated earlier, if you talk of good governance, you would talk of an effective and functional unit of this nature. But if it is not functioning, and it means then we must forget about good governance in the department. And we appreciate the steps that you are going to take for the 12 that don't want to subject themselves to the lifestyle audit, which is compulsory, that has to be done. Thank you for that. Honorable members, are there any follow-up questions? Is Honorable Graham Murray, is this a new hand or a legacy hand?
No, this is a new hand, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable. Over to you, Honorable Graham Murray.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, I'm not sure that any of my questions on the ethics officer were actually responded to, so I'm going to just reiterate what I asked with respect to that, where they are on the, because I mean, so much emphasis has been placed on this ethics officer position. So I'm still trying to understand where this ethics officer sits on the organogram in the department, and to whom they report, and who reports to them, whether or not they are autonomous or whether or not they fall within in the structure. And also when the post was advertised, and also whether or not it's a contract or permanent post. I think we do need to give clarity on that, please. I think that was the only thing that I just needed to get clarification on. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kramare. Any other follow-up questions? Yeah, Honorable Siwisa and Honorable Frank Kramare.
Yes, Mr. this network was very bad. I couldn't even hear the responses that were given. Because the 12 people have been sent for discipline, so I couldn't hear the response at all. And then the other word from the minister said 253 were vetted, only 23 got clearance. So what's the word from the minister if we've got only 23 people from 253 that got clearance from the vetting that your department did? Thank you.
Honorable Susan, I don't know whether we have lost you, but thank you. Honorable Franz Calvey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure also that my question has been answered, because I spoke to the unfunded post note being filled. What is the impact on service delivery? Then the other question from me was the detainment of the sought-after staff, and the other issue was the consequence management, how you deal with it across the different levels of the department, public works, regional offices, and municipalities. So I didn't capture a clear response in terms of those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Franz Kalvik. Minister and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I will certainly submit to the committee the role and functions of the ethics officer, the role and responsibility. There's also ethics committee. It is prescribed as to how and whether this ethics officer must be autonomous. So that information I can provide to the committee, and also the ethics officer must be permanent. And that takes me to the next question of Honorable Van Schalkwyk. It cannot be accepted that we've got unfunded posts. When we have an approved structure by DPSA, when DPSA approve a structure for operational purposes, the responsibility is then with the department to fund those posts and all of them. And this is what we are correcting now, that there must be funding in the budget. Whatever money we find in the budget in the current financial year, that we can use some slippages to fill those first posts, because these are recurring costs that we have to budget for. And then make sure in the next budget, the 23-24, that the funding is provided to fund every post within that. Yes, some of those posts that are vacant, it does have an impact on service delivery and the performance of this committee. And that is why they are not performing to the optimal, and we must fill these posts as soon as possible. And when we report back again to the committee, we must be able to show that we have funded the complete approved structure that DPSA approved in 2016. Honorable Sawisa, just on the vetting, we rely completely on the State Security Agency. It's the only agency with the legal mandate that can do the vetting. So we are really at their mercy as to how quickly they do this. But we have started this, it was a request from SCOPA in 2020 already. SCOPA has requested that all the senior managers must go for screening and vetting. And so we completely reliant on the agency to do that function, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Any comments? Right.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I think I'm covered by the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Minister, again, for the responses. If members not yet satisfied with their responses and the way that they have been responded to, I think it's also a chance for you to write down some of the responses in detail and then send them to committee secretary for members to share that information. We would really appreciate it. We support this unit as the portfolio committee. That is why we are making a follow-up, because we see it as a sign that this department, it really wants to change in the way that it is viewed and seen by the public. But also what is crucial, it shows that it is ready to do a consequence management and to fight corruption within the department and its regional offices. We're looking at that. And I think, Minister, you know, once we start with something as this portfolio committee, we follow it up thoroughly. So we'll follow it up on checking what is happening, because we really want to stand up and as the portfolio committee and say that we really played our oversight role on that one. Honorable members, we were also supposed to deal with the petition that we have received that has been forwarded to us by the Office of the Speaker, but the petitioner has indicated that she is writing her exams last week and this week and even today she will be writing. So she won't be part of this meeting. I don't know, we will see her maybe sometime next year, because we already have a fully packed program that we have to deal with. So we won't be dealing with the petition today. We will then look, deal with the minutes of the previous meetings that we have not dealt with. Can we then go to the next item, Ms. Nola? Ah, she is no longer in the meeting.
Honorable Chair, can we be excused?
Yes, we are through with you, Minister.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
So who's going to show us the minutes now in the absence of Nola? Or we'll just deal with them because they have been sent to us. Can we do it that way, Honourable Members? Or Khadija, can you share them on the screen? Honourable Members, we have received the minutes. We have the minutes of the 19th of October from the information that we have. Ms. Khadija or Mr. Denzen, can you share the minutes on the screen with us?
Chairperson, good morning, everyone. Unfortunately, I don't have the minutes. It is with the secretary. So unfortunately, I don't have copies of the minutes with me.
Okay. We do have the copies as the members. The minutes of the meeting held on the 19th October when we were considering and adopting our BRRR. Honourable Members, the members that were part of the meeting, we only had an apology from Honourable Mashele. And Honorable Zondo was absent in the meeting without the apology. Then can we, are these minutes a true reflection of what we discussed on the day? Honorable Members, Honorable Kayamare, or maybe are there any amendments? Or Honorable Kayamare?
Honourable Chairperson, I have no amendments to that, and I'd like to propose for adoption.
Thank you, Honourable Prime Murray. So the minutes of the 19th of October 2022 are a reflection, and Honourable Prime Murray is moving that to adopt the minutes. Can I get a second, Honourable Prince Galvey?
I'll second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The minutes of the 19th of October 2022 adopted. And then the minutes of the
9th of November.
Yeah, the minutes of the 9th of November. The minutes of the 9th of November 2022. Present, absent, and on this particular meeting, we were getting a briefing from the department and PMTE on its first quarter performance. Can we then get a mover that we adopt this minute as a true reflection of what was discussed in the meeting of the 9th of November? Honorable Prime Murray?
Chairperson, I'd just like to say that these are very unusual minutes because they are extremely detailed. We don't normally get such detailed minutes, but they're excellent. And as a result, I would like to propose for the adoption. Thank you.
They are seriously good. It's as if it's a report on its own. Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Can we then get a seconder, Honorable Members?
Honorable Members,
thank you, Honorable Franz Kelvick, for that. Do we have another?
Yes, Chairperson. No. What's the set of minutes for the meeting that was held on the 2nd of November?
But where is that? Where is that set?
It was also sent to members, Chair, with the 1, the 9th. Unless you want me to flight it through, because I can do that now.
No, my packet doesn't have it. Honourable Members, do you have that? The one on the 2nd?
No, Chair. I don't have it, Chair.
I don't have it.
So I'm not the one. Then Ms. Martinez was saying that. But again, if you have it, we can also deal with it. The minutes of the 2nd of November, in which we were dealing with the report of our oversight visits to Telkom Towers, Honorable Members. Can we then fly to them, Nola, because we don't have them?
I've got them on screen, so I'm not sure if they're not.
Yeah, busy. Can you then move up?
Okay.
So that we read exactly what is there.
Chairperson.
Yes.
I'm not feeling very comfortable with this now. Can we rather receive the minutes and deal with it tomorrow? Consider it tomorrow.
Thank you, Honorable Franz Kalvik. I think that one is in order. Ms. Martinez, I don't know what happened, but we all didn't receive this set of minutes of the 2nd of November. So can you please send them to us that we read them overnight, and then tomorrow when we deal with our program of tomorrow, we'll also add in also ensuring that we adopt these minutes.
Well, do you think?
Because now we can't read now. We have to concentrate on this and you can't even write what you want to comment on.
I'll send them through, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Another item on the agenda after the minutes?
There's nothing else, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members. In fact, thank you, Ms. Martinez. Thank you, Honorable Members, for your constant progressive deliberations on the program that we had today. The reality, Honorable Members, we always have to ensure that collusion and corruption is not part of the department that we're oversighting. This unit is one of the important units, but if it is there for lip service, if it is there just for compliance, it means that it is not working. So we will have to play our role in ensuring that it is functional and it is working. And we'll do so by demanding reports to see that is there any work being done in the department to ensure that this unit is fully functional. And responsible, ethical people are there to ensure that it is functional. Thank you again, Honorable Members, for your time. The meeting is adjourned. Yes.
You adjourn, because somewhere in between I couldn't hear the responses. Can through you, Chair, the Secretary, make a request that their response must be sent in written form as soon as possible, because I couldn't hear a thing as what was being said.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Suwisa. We will make you follow up in requesting the responses to be written down and sent to the to Ms. Martinez for us to share. Honorable Tring, your end is up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Chair, I saw the amended program, the fourth quarter amended program. Just wanting to know, I know that you had indicated that we would be doing an oversight visit when Parliament goes into recess. But we also now have that Section 89 report coming to Parliament on the 6th, I think it is. So I don't know whether the oversight visits to the ports is still on or whether that's been postponed.
Thank you, Honorable Trink. With the new program that has been amended by the programming committee, for us to receive that report, we can do an oversight, and also with that report having to be received by Parliament. So we'll definitely have to postpone the oversight and maybe look at having the oversight maybe early next year, because we are also allowed to have the oversight visit before the opening of Parliament. So we'll look at that, because for real, we're all looking at receiving that report, the people of South Africa. So as the representative of our political parties, and our consciences, we ought to be there to be part of those that will be receiving the report. So
thank you,
I thank you for also bringing it up in the meeting, because we would forget and then we would not understand why are we not going there. So Ms. Martinez, please work on that. We can't go there on the oversight visit on that time when there is a report that is supposed to be received.
Chairperson?
Yes.
I did send the most updated program that does not have an oversight visit. And I think I did specify in the email that there were amendments that were made to the previous one. So I sent that program last week as I was sending the meeting request for this meeting, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for being proactive. Thank you so much. Honorable members, on that note, then we may attend the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.